Om Shanti. Today, the subject is human greatness. And some of you may be aware that in the service, Baba's service in United States, this is the theme that is being taken up during this year. It's really conversations around the topic of human greatness. So it's a very deep subject. And if you think about it, on one side there's God, and on the other side there is nature, which includes, you know, the insects, birds, animals, plants, rocks, the elements of nature and the creatures. And then the interface between those two is humanity. Now, if you're looking at nature from only a biological point of view, humanity is part of that insofar as we're talking about the human body. Once we start to talk about intelligence, and particularly spirituality, then it becomes a different matrix. Because one of the differences between a human being and all other life forms is that it's only the human being that has the possibility to realize God, or that has the possibility to realize themselves as a spiritual entity. You know, sometimes people meditate and they have their pet cat or their pet dog, and they're sitting next to them, you know, looking in the same general direction, and they say, well, my cat and my dog is meditating. Isn't it? They do that. But what's actually going on is that you're meditating, you're putting out vibrations which any creature is going to enjoy. Because when a human being is in communication or communion with the Supreme Being, then these vibrations that I call the elements of the soul, the five elements of the soul, purity, peace, inner power, love, and bliss, these vibrations are being put out in an intensified way when you're meditating. As that is to say, when you're a BK and you're doing Raja Yoga meditation. Other forms of meditation don't do this. And the feelings of the purity, peace, inner power, love, and bliss are very pleasant. So any part of matter, whether it's inert, walls and floor and rocks and earth, water, whatever, that is going to pick up those vibrations, and the chemical structure of that has a tendency to become beautiful, to become symmetrical and geometrically very much, you know, these hexagons and this kind of thing. And when a cat or dog or horse or any other kind of mammal is around, they will also pick it up. Even I remember there was one BK who had goldfish. It's not a mammal, it's a cold-blooded creature. But the goldfish, she observed that the goldfish was happier when she was around and happiest when she was in a good stage and meditating and all that. So matter, all the way from animals to just rocks, is very sensitive to the thoughts that people put out. And there are a few people who have done experiments about this, and the one that many BKs find very nice is the work done in Japan by the Hado organization, which has made these books called Messages from Water, showing even if you have a word like love, a printed word, that also shows in a positive way in the chemical structure of the water. And then if you think about it in terms of the health or healing arts, you see, our bodies are anyway 70% water, and the rest of them is varying percentages of air, earth, fire, and ether. So, of course, basically we are moving around in mud. Right? And what the soul is thinking, feeling, is affecting the body. And so the medical researchers have come up with the term psychosomatic illnesses, which are illnesses that are directly the result of human beings having negative thoughts. An example that I like very much in this regard is tears. The chemical content of tears of sorrow is very salty, bitter, and the chemical content of tears of love, tears of joy, is very sweet. And you can taste it because they run down and they go in your mouth. And so they're both basically just water, but still, there's a big difference. And because we are all meditators, we know that if you have a negative thought, within a fraction of a second, you can experience a negative effect on your body in, you may say, adrenaline or I don't know what, but you can feel it. And so your conscience will tell you that that wasn't right, even when you feel it on a physical level. And when you have really pure positive thoughts, there's a very strong effect on your body. So when we're talking about human greatness, in there comes a number of things. One is the huge difference between a human being and all other life forms on this earth. And so I look at it that the human being is really the interface between God and the rest of the world as we know it, the material universe and the natural world. So the human being has the all the parts of matter in the body, and our consciousness is such that we are the only species who's able to conceptualize and think of and derive benefit from God. You see, nobody else except human beings can do this. And this puts us on a completely different category from what we know as the animal kingdom or the plant kingdom or whatever. Now, because the material world responds to our thinking and feeling, people have concluded that this is a proof of the omnipresence of God. But it's actually faulty logic, because it doesn't prove that. What it does prove is that matter is sensitive to spirit. But it doesn't prove that matter is spirit. You see? There's a difference. And we're able to say this purely and simply because Shiv Baba has told us in human language, you see. So if you remember a Murli of maybe a week or 10 days ago, in which Baba had said that what people cannot understand and what Brahmins can understand is that Shiv Baba, Supreme God, the Supreme Being, the Supreme Soul, comes into the body of Brahma Baba and speaks. This people cannot understand. So out of all the human beings, there are some human beings who have a capacity for greatness that is on a different level from other human beings, purely and simply because, which Baba sometimes remarks about, the speciality of Brahma Kumars and Kumaris, even if they have no other speciality, recognition of God. You see, and it's a tiny percentage. The expression that we hear in the Murlis, koi, koto me koi me bi koi, which means out of millions, a few, and out of those few, very, very few. In the Western world, you have an expression that corresponds to that. Many are called, but few are chosen. You know that expression. It's a Christian expression. And it corresponds to this because, in a sense, we can say that we, our mandate as BKs is to go and try to explain to other people what we know. There's no service of cats and dogs and horses explaining to them that you are a cat soul and you are a dog soul, because that doesn't have any meaning. We know that those are souls, but that they are not able to know that they are souls. And only a human being can handle and conceptualize and act upon the concept of thinking of the self as a soul, as opposed to thinking of the self as a body. One of the ways in which you can see the impact of this is that at the time of the Golden Age and Silver Age, when the world is called paradise or heaven, it is so because all the human souls that are on the planet are in a natural state of soul consciousness. And as a consequence of that, they're continuously putting out a high rate of vibrations of purity, peace, power, love, and bliss. And so in the animal and plant and rock kingdom, everything is pure, peaceful, harmonious. Nature serves humanity. It's in perfect balance and perfect order. And you can say that this is the indicator of human greatness at its greatest. How did humanity, or those few souls who were on the earth at the beginning of the cycle, or for the first half of the cycle, how did they become that? Through their connection and relationship with the Supreme Soul. So human greatness is possible only when that human is in connection and relationship with God. And very few human beings are able to come into direct connection with God. Right? And we look at ourselves, and if you check your chart, you will find that there's a number of things that could be better. Could have more yoga, could have less waste thoughts, could be more subtle, could have less vices, all of this. But nobody would say, do not recognize God. Everybody will say, no, recognize God. So even if you have only a quarter second of remembrance of Baba, because of having recognized God, that puts you on the other side of the line from those who don't recognize. You see? And when Baba talks to us about service through the mind, the analogy that Dadi Gulzar has given, which is a very beautiful analogy, is that when you're doing service through the mind, you're emulating the sun. You're just sitting there in the sky, radiating. You're not sending some rays to these people and not to those people, and special rays to this one, and maybe, you know, a few to that one, but more to this other one. No. The radiance of the sun is the same in all directions. So when we're doing service through the mind, we're not supposed to be serving some particular person or some particular rock or whatever it happens to be. No, we're just being in the stage of complete soul consciousness in deep connection with Baba as a conduit for his power, peace, love, bliss, and all the things to just radiate. And then different people will pick it up according to their sensitivity or their capacity to pick it up. So if we are doing that on a constant basis, there is an effect on people's minds. Now, we know that communication, verbal communication, is a small part of the spectrum. But if we are speaking about what we are actually being, then people get it. If you are something and then you say something else, it won't get across. You see? And this is one of the reasons why, you know, sometimes people have a lot of objection. They say, anyone could read the Murali. It's just words. Why somebody can read the Murali and somebody else can't? That means in front of the class, this kind of thing. Well, it's one of the reasons for that is that a person who is intensively doing the full practice, who has been identified as an appropriate instrument and positioned in that place, you know, they are doing the practice, and what they say and what they do is what's in the Murali, number-wise. And accordingly, people are able to understand what's in the Murali. So if a very new BK is doing all the practice, but they're still very new, they haven't accumulated experience, they haven't accumulated power, and they read the Murali, people are going to pick up substantially less than if the same Murali is read by a person with 70 years experience. Same words, different vibe. Because the words carry with themselves the whole 70 years of spiritual practice, of handling the different varieties of Maya, of knowing the whole history of the BKs and being part of it and so on. This is the difference. It's an invisible difference, but it's a huge difference. And if somebody is not doing the practice, nobody's going to come and listen, even if nobody knows, because it's, the vibration is missing, you see. And these are invisible, intangible things, but yet the soul feels them. You feel it and practically in your body, you see. Because your body is very sensitive to all these things. So when we're thinking about human greatness, we also need to be aware that people are not equal. In the Western world, there's a value system which is based on the idea that everybody is born free and equal. Right? Comes from a philosopher, I think John Stuart Mill, one of these. And he said that, and everybody said yes. Okay. But Shiv Baba said, actually, no. It's not like that at all. We have number one and number 6 billion or 7 billion. And 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, all the way up to 6.5, 7 billion. Every soul has a number. And of course, we know who the number one is. Right? The number one soul is Brahma Baba, who in his first birth is Krishna, in his adult life, Narayan, the master of the world, the emperor of the world, who is there by divine right. And then you have all the way down to number 6.5 or 7 billion, who is nobody in particular, we can say, and we don't know who that is. There has been a time when Baba identified the 5 most influential souls there are. Brahma Baba, Mama, Christ, Muhammad, Buddha. These 5. I see. And so they are very powerful souls. Brahma Baba, Mama is mentioned as, in the Christian tradition, Adam and Eve. In the Islamic tradition, Adam and Bibi. You know, and the word Adam is a Hindi word meaning the man. The man. Adam is the man. Adam Shumari is the word for the population. How many men there are? How many people? Right? Then you have this word Adi Dev. You know this word Adi Dev, right? Which is translated as the first man in the biography of Brahma Baba that you must be familiar with. But it also means the original divine human being. So, one of the things that happens at the end of the cycle, where we are now, is that we do not know who we are. Right? Do you know who you are? Slightly. But not really. You don't know who you are in the sense that you don't know which is your number in the scheme of all the way from 1 to 6.5 to 7 billion. Could be anything. You say, oh well, 108? Maybe. 16,000? 900,000 definitely, you know. So, okay. Those who recognize God are the top 1 million souls in the world, say, in the whole spectrum of population. And those souls are the only ones in the whole world at any time who have a direct connection with God. And the nature of that connection is, we say the word recognition, How does Shiv Baba give us birth through Brahma Baba? He, through ABK, or through Brahma Baba direct, says, you are mine. And we say, yes, Baba, we are yours. And that's the relationship, the connection. You recognize and you accept. You can't accept without recognizing. You can recognize and then not recognize because of the shadow of Maya and all of that. But the moment of recognition, and if a person really, really recognizes and goes through all the battles with Maya and all the mood swings and whatever it is that goes on in the process of the confluence age between starting to become a Brahmin and ending up as a perfect angel, karmatit, and then a deity, you see, very, very few souls do this. And they are also known as really great souls. And they are sitting in this room here. And we have others, you see. So we have to think about this privilege, this fortune, that I, the soul, have something in me that has been able to attract God in such a way that he allows me to see him. Because if you think about it, just think for a moment, do any of us have the capacity to recognize God? Do we? You say yes, but I would question it. I would say that we recognize God more because he allowed us to than we are somehow more capable than somebody else. What do you think? Because if you compare yourself to anybody else at the time when you had this moment of recognition, looking at your intelligence level, character, etc., you know, some people say, well, why me? What's so special about me? Isn't it? You know? And so, in my churnings about this, I definitely have come to the conclusion that no, for some reason, Baba allowed me to see him. Right? And to understand what he's saying. And then he says, okay, now make effort because you have duty. So he allows us, he gives us a great privilege, but along with that privilege there's a duty. And again, I think this is connected with the idea of greatness. Greatness is when a person understands a duty that is global and then performs that duty. Conscientiously, with responsibility, and at any cost. Because sacrifice is involved. See, once you become a person who has recognized Baba, that means he has pointed the finger at you and said, okay, your third eye is open, you can see me. And you say, wow, fantastic, marvelous, great, I'm now a BK, I'm now a Baba's child. And he says, right, now you have to go and serve the world. Isn't it? I see. And some people say, yes, of course. It's known as giving the return. You know this expression? Giving the return. So, if God gave us this gift of being able to understand him to a greater or lesser extent, to see him, to recognize him, to be his child, be his student, be his follower, and become an angel and become a deity and rule the world and have 21 births in heaven and all the way through eternity to be a leading history maker. You see, this is very highly privileged. And so, at least when we recognize this much about ourselves and what we have received, then we have to give the return of that, and that is the service. And doing godly service is a voluntary thing. We get enormous reward for it. So it is well known that we cannot do selfless service, but yet we have to do selfless service. Selfless service in the sense that we're not doing it out of greed, we're not doing it out of any sense of insecurity or anything, but we're doing it because the one we love is asking us to do this. And so we say, well, of course. And so we get involved in it. And now he's saying, radiate the power of God, the peace of God, the love of God, the purity of God, the bliss of God, such that people are able to experience it and know God because you become the conduits for it. You see? And so that greatness in those humans who have that privilege to be able to serve other human beings, I think is a very important thing to be aware about. Now in this world, if you look at people who are considered great, much of it is concerned with what they've done. Social work, scientific work, all very much on a physical level. And it's very good, it's very beneficial for people. But greater than that is the greatness of spiritual sustenance that is done by the souls who are the interface between God and humanity. So if you think of the founders of religions, the ones in question, the major religions, Islam and Christianity and Buddhism, these three souls, Buddha, Christ and Abraham, that Baba has singled out. We know from Murli's that those souls come here and they take from Baba, and so they're able to sustain their religions during the Copper Age and Iron Age, but they don't come in the Golden Age and Silver Age, where they have a different part. Now then, thinking about ourselves as being specially privileged, as being the very, very few people who are actively interacting and relating and participating with the Creator in the creative process and receiving the fruits of that as the kingdom of the Golden Age and the Silver Age. You see, this thing which is getting done through us is remembered by those who never actually get to go. As a historical reality, there was heaven, there were divine beings in heaven, and we were not there. But then for us, we will say, there was heaven, there were divine beings, and we were that, but now we are fallen. And we are in the process of rising again. So this a commitment and willingness to face all of the forces of negativity in order to fulfill the directions of God is greatness. You see, because you have to overcome death, you have to overcome pain, you have to overcome sin, you have to become completely perfect, and you have to absorb all of the knowledge of God, all of the powers of God, all of everything, and, you know, put that into the world. You see, this is our function. We are conduits for that. And being willing to do that at any cost, was a very high cost, you see. It's a very high stakes game. You win a great deal, but you also stand to lose a great deal. And you have to do things that other people don't have to do. You see, there isn't anyone else who is living in the family celibate. Very, very few would do that. And nobody except us is doing it for the sake of God. They may be doing it for their own interest, but we are doing it for the sake of God. That makes it different. You know, God himself has said, okay, I want you to do this, 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 this. I want you to get up every day at 4 o'clock in the morning, and if you can do it at 2 o'clock, it's better. And sit in my remembrance, absorb spiritual strength and qualities, and radiate that into the world for the rest of your life. And when any kind of challenges or temptations or negativity come your way, well, you just overcome it. And you say, yes, okay, we'll do that. Right? And every year you come to Madhuban, so you go and create the money to do that, and you do a full-time job, and you run a center, and you do godly service, and you say, yes. And you don't go to the movies, and you know, you don't have any vices and all of this, and you say yes. You see? And so this is called sadhana or tapasya. You remember Sister Mohini's class? Some of you were here for that. If not, you get the tape. She was talking about 10 different things that are part of that process of sadhana. And it is this practice that actually makes it possible for there to be harmony, peace, love, mutual benefit in the world. And God himself is enabling us to do that. And we are saying, yes, we will do that. This is greatness. You see, we look at ourselves and we think, you know, we're very ordinary, and we are very ordinary, but we're also very great because of this willingness and readiness to do something like this for the love of God, for the whole life, at any cost. And that's special. And then we look at ourselves carefully, and then we see, well, we're not doing what we could do. We're not doing what we should do in various areas. And so there is this hierarchy of people, all the way from number one, Brahma Baba, all the way to number 1 million or so, or number 330 million, however you like to count it. But it is those souls who come into the golden age and silver age who have that possibility. And then what we do with that is the calculation of our greatness. You see? and our usefulness to anyone else. An animal can't do that. Only a human being can do that. Now then, leaving aside the small group of people who are BKs, looking at all of humanity, the greatness in all of humanity, there are possibilities that every single person has, because at every moment we have choice. Now, one of the things that Sri Baba teaches us, and which we have to become embodiments of and demonstrate so that others can also see, is making choices at each and every second. So at any moment in time, we could be soul conscious or body conscious. I don't know how many seconds there are in a day, but you probably do. So at every second, we have this choice. And to become body conscious is when we are not paying attention. And to become soul conscious is to pay attention. So every moment that we pay attention is a moment when we choose to do the right thing. So any human being, of course, not everybody would know these terms, body conscious and soul conscious, but anyone can choose to be positive or negative. Because during a day, there are many opportunities in which we could feel bad about something. Somebody says something, somebody does something, you notice something, whatever. We have choice. Are we going to think about it, or are we going to let it pass? Are we going to get involved in something that's none of our business, or are we going to identify, is this my business or not? Do I have to think about this? If so, how much, for how long, what are the different options that I have? And if a person is really very attentive, whether or not they know spiritual knowledge, but if a person is really attentive, they can be positive. Usually I think that we think about these things a lot, so we calculate it more probably than other people who don't think about it, but it's only really when we're not paying attention that things go wrong. And so one of the words for consciousness, one of the synonyms for consciousness, if you're consciously conscious, is this word awareness. And in Hindi we use this word smriti. And then if you think of the Gita, Srimad Bhagavad Gita, the famous last section, the final understanding of the Gita, is called Nashto Moha Smriti Labdha, these four words, which mean that you have destroyed attachment and you have become aware. You see. So ultimately, what any human being, it means in a non-spiritual vocabulary, is you want to be aware, or you can say awake. So when we are aware and awake, we make conscious choice. And it is the nature of a human soul to be pure, peaceful, powerful, loveful, and blissful. So when we're conscious and making conscious choice, our choices are according to those five qualities. And when we're unconscious, when we're unaware, then we get pulled into the gravitational pull of the body, which is why it's called body consciousness. And then we do something on the basis of what's called the five vices, which in another way can be called negative emotions. greed, arrogance, lust, attachment, anger. These can be called vices, they can be called negative emotions. Emotions, that means feelings, desires. Because you do not feel fulfillment, there are desires. When you experience fulfillment, desires are unknown. And so there's also this expression in the Gita, which is iccha matram avidya, which is you have no awareness of what a desire is. So that's only possible when you're in a state of fulfillment. And so when you're empty or when you're unaware, then the desires come. And so the very, very simple key to human greatness is this privilege, this permission that Baba has allowed us to see him, recognize him. And having done that, there's an implication, because having seen, we then have to act upon it. So our usefulness in the world is that we have the possibility to demonstrate through our being, behavior, character, activity, vibrations, and whatever, what it means in practical terms to be great, to be connected with the divine, to be sourced by the divine. So a human who is not great is a human who is not connected with the divine. And if you look at the vast spectrum of problems in this world, from crimes, suffering, poverty, corruption, all the different things, the only reason why a person would be experiencing these things is a factor of action performed without any contact with the divine. Right? And when we start studying these things that we study, it's all about perform action in remembrance of God, isn't it? Eat your food in remembrance, drink your tea in remembrance, walk along in remembrance, wash your clothes in remembrance, cook your food in remembrance, right? Very conscious, very aware, absorbing, accumulating. And when we do this over a long period of time, and we get into the habit of it, and our conscience becomes refined. When we are not connected, and when we are spiritually depleted, any time we experience any kind of challenge, moral challenge, ethical challenge, very often, or we could even say invariably, we act against our own conscience. We act against our own principles. Because we all know pretty much what's right and wrong. Every time we do something against that, our faculty of conscience becomes dysfunctional or is reduced in its functionality. Every time we listen to the voice of conscience and we overcome a fear, a doubt, an anxiety, whatever, it's a victory, and increased functionality comes in our conscience. So, you know, we can't just operate on the basis of thousands of different rules and regulations about this is right and that is wrong and don't do this and thou shalt not kill and thou shalt not steal and thou shalt not covet thy neighbor's wife and all of this business, you see. Because each and every moment, each and every situation has lots of different ramifications. So we need to have a mechanism inside which directs us. This is right today, right now, in this situation. In a similar situation that's not exactly the same, we have to do something a bit different. And there's no amount of law books and rule books that can be sufficiently complex to handle all this. But the mechanism of conscience, which Baba sometimes speaks of as the divine intellect, that knows, yeah, this is right. How do we get this? Srimat. There are three things that we learn about in Brahma Kumaris. Srimat, Manmat, and Paramat. Yes? Now, what I have found is that Paramat corresponds to what people think of as morality. Morality. What is morality? What is ethics? If you look at the actual meaning of the terms, morality and ethics is a way of handling human affairs according to convention and tradition, which has stood the test of time for quite a long period of time. That's morality and ethics. And it's very often against Srimat, right? So morality and ethics is what people have come up with without God. So it's more or less okay most of the time or some of the time. But overall, morality and ethics has led us to a crisis of values. The evidence is there. Quality of values in humanity, in any society, following ethical and moral principles, has resulted in a collapse of values, which means it's the best that people could do, but it's not effective. And so when Shiv Baba arrives, he gives Srimat, which doesn't exist in Manmat and Paramat. So if we go back for a moment to conscience, every human being from their childhood over the course of their life has done an increasing number of actions against their own conscience. An example that I sometimes give is the first time you have to give a bribe. In India, giving bribes is quite common. And so the first time you give a bribe, you're probably about 20, or around that age group. And you have learned in your childhood that giving bribes is wrong. And then you find, once you enter what's known as the real world, the adult world, that it's pretty much impossible to get anything done without having recourse to giving and taking of bribes. And so there's going to be the first time you do it. And at that time, your conscience is going to say, I don't know about this. I always thought this was wrong, you know. And there's a lot of peer pressure, there's a lot of circumstances, and there are very few people who stick to their principles and say, at any cost, I'm not going to do this. Many people compromise their principles, begin to go against their conscience. And as this progresses, gradually the conscience will no longer give you the message that this is wrong. They say, oh yeah, this is normal, you know. And not only that, but we can start being on the receiving end of this thing and enrich ourselves. And you justify and so on. And so every time we do something against our conscience because of justification or whatever, our greatness goes down. You see? And anyone who is so strong and so clear and so honest that they find a way to follow the voice of conscience at any cost, these are the ones whom other people say, no, this is a person of greatness, isn't it? Am I right? And when we have Srimat, it makes a huge difference because it's in black and white. In the Muralis, be soul conscious. Remember Shiv Baba. Your original qualities of purity, peace, love, power, and bliss need to be the reference point for your action. Are we at 7 o'clock? Yes. Okay, so of course there's a lot more, but anyway, we have to stop now. So you get the idea, yes? Okay, we're going to have meditation now, half an hour, and I'll do a commentary in which I'll put in some more of the points that are connected with this, and especially for us to really go in and look at the mechanism of conscience and how it gets refined by following Srimat and intensifying the yoga. Om Shanti. I turn the attention within. Trying to make contact with that tiny point the core of my being. My essential self. This requires a lot of concentration. We begin with the inner picture of the tiniest infinitesimal point of light. It's not a thing, it's a being. This body is a thing. I am the being that animates it. this tiny point of light is not part of the body. I am not part of this body. I exist in connection with it, working through it. I am a being of light. And the most important thing is truth. And so the definition of soul is sat and chit, true and aware. The more I am true to myself, the more I am aware. True to myself means the thoughts, the words, the actions correspond to my original nature. I am pure, peaceful, very powerful, loving, and I exist in a state of bliss. I can only maintain this when I am detached from the scenes of drama. Either I am free, or I am affected by scenes of drama. Being detached, I am free. Every scene of drama is what it is. It's not good, it's not bad, it just is. In freedom and detachment, I can come to terms with all the scenes of drama. And not be attracted by what seems positive and repelled by what seems negative. Where there is attraction and repulsion, then I am influenced by the scenes of drama. I say this scene is good, that scene is bad. I am not free. So turning within and being a pure, peaceful, loving, powerful point of pure consciousness. Letting go of the scenes of drama. It becomes possible to connect with Sheep Baba. Being neutral in the face of the scenes of drama. I am attracted by Baba, the beautiful one, the shining point of infinite strength. The most attractive. The truth. The most beloved. In that attraction, I'm drawn close. Into relationship here's the ocean of love, and I am the essence of love. And with the gift of divine intellect, I understand more clearly what is love. It's a power to give generously. The power to speak the truth wisely. Conscience becomes clear and refined. Looking at my action of the whole day, I can see very clearly if there has been anything against the conscience, even slightly, it is clearly visible. Seeing it with such clarity, the soul knows Yes, that could have been done another way. Pay attention. Remember it. Don't do it again. Simple. Let it go. And the soul learns to be clean and clear. Love for Baba. Draws the soul to Baba. Anything impure cannot go to Baba. Anything on your conscience you have to see it clearly. Place it before Baba. Realize it. Surrender it. And it is cleaned. And the soul goes close to Baba. Soul becomes more and more like Baba, true, clean, pure. And the strength of Baba flows into the soul. Power of purity comes. The power to do right action comes. The attraction to stay connected with the truth compels the soul to act according to conscience at any cost. The conscience is very subtle, refined. It's a progressive process. You begin to trust yourself. And trust Srimat. Trust your connection with the Supreme Being. And as you prepare to come back into this material environment, trust the voice of conscience. And the actions become great. And then the soul is able to stabilize in peace. Radiating purity, love, and bliss. And enjoy the sweet silence of the soul world.